hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation. And today we are making a place in the conversation for Brian Tuck, founder of the Groove Kennett Square. And so Nick and I are excited to have Brian with us. And so, Nick, why don't you say hello and share a little bit about what you've been up to the past few days?
Oh, boy. Well, hello. It's nice to be here. It's nice to meet Brian. What have I been up to? Well, I went to Winnetur with my daughter and grandson on Monday. And on Tuesday, I worked on my tax return. Wednesday, I volunteered at Winnetur. Yesterday, I met my brother for coffee in the morning, and then I met another friend for lunch. And today, I had an MRI.
Okay. And in the afternoon, you're here doing a podcast.
Yeah, here we are.
So maybe a podcast we need to do is your boring retired life, the boring retired life of Nick Everhart.
I've got a few things going.
Yeah, you got a lot going. Well, we just made it back. Nancy and I just made it back from my son's wedding. He got married Sunday, and we were down in Wilmington, North Carolina, and celebrated that. And yeah, it was kind of a neat thing. I got to preside over the wedding there. And that was kind of cool. So but we're all here today. And Brian, welcome. To a place in the conversation. We're glad to have you with us. Why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to everybody and introduce Groove Kennett Square to those people who might not be familiar.
Sure thing. Well, thank you for having me, first of all, on your podcast. Very, very much appreciated. Well, good morning, afternoon, evening to you all who are listening or watching whenever you're consuming this. That's what I love about this platform. It's so flexible. You know, you can, you know, whether you hear this on day one or a week from now or 2 weeks from now, it's hopefully still relevant. So Groove Kennett Square is a business, I guess. You could call it. It's more of a life mission from my perspective. I'm a professional drummer and educator. And that Groove Kennett Square is my teaching studio. I have students really of all ages and ability levels, from total beginners up to working professionals. Have a gentleman in the studio who tours nationally that lives in the area, but never plays here. It's interesting. You live in communities and you find people who are really high performers in their field, but they never, you know, they never interact locally because his band is playing a venue like the Fillmore in Philadelphia, for example, like 1,500, 2,000 seat theaters. So considering there are none of those around here, he's not a local performer. But it's you know, percussion to me is a vehicle for self-development and for growth. And for young people, it's, you know, I when people find out what I do for a living, they don't at first see the developmental aspects of it. So after a couple of minutes of talking to them, then they get it, that it's a vehicle for learning discipline, good work habits, punctuality, being prepared, getting comfortable being in front of people. You know, I should have a study or a statistic for this, but you know, people's number one fear is public speaking. It's not death. It's not taxes. It's not, you know, whatever other horrible things are out there. It's public speaking. So we do events throughout the year that put the students in a performance situation. They're in front of their friends and family. So it's a comfortable atmosphere. But if you can be a musician on stage, you can go to the front of your class and deliver, you know, 3 minutes on, you know, whatever your report is about. So there's a lot more to it than just, you know, hitting things with sticks.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, I just one of your students happened to play in church a few weeks ago, and she's 8, 9 years old, mm-hmm. and I was surprised. I didn't see her behind the drum set, and then yeah. You know, the person who leads worship started off and leaned over to the drums and said, "Okay, you ready to start?" And the 1, 2, you know, and I was, part of me, I was laughing, saying, "What is this? Our drummer doesn't. We've never started a song like that. But what is this? Right. What's going on?" You know, and then the song went off perfectly. You know, and the drums were spot on, and it was, and then and it wasn't until the song was over, and Etta, who, you know, she's tiny, and stepped out from behind the drums and was carrying her drumsticks and was smiling this big, huge smile, walked out from behind the drums. And it was like, oh, okay. But I mean, well, talk about a confidence booster.
Yeah. The self-esteem is a huge part of it. And if, when young people, when I say young people, I mean, you know, 12th grade or less. When young people realize that something they do or something they're good at makes other people happy, then they get such a boost of confidence from that. And for all of the reasons, you know, this is way beyond the scope of what we have time for today, but like for all of the negative forces, this is another of those beneath the surface reasons for why I do what I do. But all of the negative forces that are working against our kids, whether it's people being bullies or not feeling like they fit in, or addiction or screen time issues, or, you know, all of those kinds of things. If you're able to provide something that can counter those things, I think, you know, you're doing something good. And this, you know, this is not, you know, specific to percussion necessarily. You know, you could have a high school baseball coach or football coach in here telling you the same thing. It's just a different vehicle, but it's the same, you know, the same developmental processes.
Yeah. I was fascinated, Brian, when you started to talk, you talked about Groove Kennett Square being your business, but then you talked about it being something deeper than that. You talked about it as your life mission or life passion. I forget exactly the phrase you used, but you alluded to it as being something much deeper than that. What do you mean by that? Talk about that. Help us understand that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I am not a young person anymore, unfortunately. But I started when I was a kid, and I mean like 8 years old, 9 years old. If there were pencils or rulers, and kids, rulers are these things that are about 12 inches long that we used to use to measure distance. Before the smartphone destroyed everything, the rulers would be drumsticks, and I would just play on, you know, on the chair, on the arms of the chair, or a couch, or pillows, and generally drove my mom nuts. And then she finally got me connected with a drum teacher. This is 1983 now. When I was 11, had just turned 11, I think it was a birthday present actually. And that was it. Like I, there was, that is what I wanted to do all the time. And it was like, I played Little League and some other things, but I was always a music kid, you know, right from that day forward.
That's cool.
And it's, you know, so I can, now that I've had a little bit of perspective, it's interesting to see young people who I know where they're at psychologically. Like, but they're like Etta, for instance, she is a music person. She might not realize it yet, but the way, the enthusiasm she shows, and I have other students like that too, that when they come in, you can tell, or when they're sitting behind the drum kit or the marimba or whatever we're working on, you can tell they're in their element. And this is the thing that they like to do the most, I think. It's really interesting to see it now, you know, as a 50-something. We won't say what, but it's cool. It's you know, to me, it's not work. So if I'm there, you know, 12 hours a day or whatever it is, we do a lot of video production and audio production as well, and some voiceover work and some other things. But it's not work. I'm not, tired. I go home because it's 10 o'clock at night, not because, you know, I feel like, oh, this is a drag, or I hate this, or why am I doing this? This also explains the massive number of parking tickets I get in the borough, because I refuse to buy the permit for $800 or whatever it is. We all have to fight the power in our own way.
That's it. And there's a whole other podcast we could have. We could talk about that. So how did it move for you from a young kid drumming on your mom's sofa with rulers to being the founder of Groove Kennett Square? Right. So there's the passion. How did it end up manifesting itself where you said, okay, no, this is, I want to make a living doing this. And I don't want to, you know, work some other 9-to-5 job and have this be something that I do when I clock out at 5. Like, I want to make this is my thing.
Sure. Well, the short version is, up until I was second year in undergrad. So I went to Westchester University and I entered as a music education major. Now, this is in my freshman year was 1989. And in 1990, 91, this is going to sound insane now, but at that time, the job market for teachers, particularly elementary and secondary ed, was terrible. And the number of people that I personally knew who were graduating with a music ed degree and good people, smart people, not just somebody who barely got by. These were very capable individuals who ended up working at, you know, literally waiting tables, working at the rental car place, working in some other field that was so removed from where they thought they were going to go, just because there were no jobs available. Hmm. Now it's much different, obviously, but that's, you know, 30 years ago. So I, third year of undergrad, I changed to business management. I figured I'll just get a business degree and then I can navigate my way forward through that. But I stayed in all of the performing ensembles for 4 years. So I was in the Westchester Marching Band for 4 years and taught it my fifth year, which is what they have their seniors do. Percussion ensemble, playing mallet instruments, marimba and vibraphone and things like that. Wind ensemble, which is one of their signature ensembles at the time. So I was in all of those groups with all of the performance and education majors the whole time. So I had the performance side of it. Did I take music theory 4 and that kind of thing? No, I didn't get that far. But But I tried to keep both, you know, the practical side of me and what I really like doing going at the same time. Excuse me. Sorry about that. So from that point forward, I starting in, you know, like 91, 92, I started taking on private students here and there, not in any kind of significant way, but I always had one or two with me. And as I got older, I started to wonder if I approached education and this weird business that shouldn't exist. Like, it really shouldn't. It's kind of an outlier, I think, which is part of its charm. You don't start a music school and teach only one instrument. That doesn't make any sense. Like, mm-hmm. How are we going to live? But what I thought at the beginning was, if I could approach it in a branded way and develop a system for running it and, you know, some norms around how it markets itself, and think of it like a yoga studio in a way, right? Because those have group activities, they have one-on-one sessions, they have multiple teachers coming in and out, and it can be replicated in multiple sites. That's the 2.0 version of this that I haven't gotten to yet, but we're gonna get there at some point. We opened in 2018, November 1, I believe is the date, or it might've been October 1st. And then there was steady growth. You know, the first year was like any other small business, building awareness, you know, what is this thing? Where is it located? All of those kinds of things. And just stuck with it, you know, and I just made this the focus of my professional life. And we had decent growth in year two. By year three, I was confident it was going to work. It wasn't really until the third anniversary I thought, okay, I mean me in the studio. Sorry, I always do that. The COVID thing was troublesome because you can't really teach drums or percussion remote. Not like you can guitar or piano, where the barrier to communicating is actually quite low. Like if you're a guitarist, you know, you buy a small USB audio interface for $99 that has two channels. You plug your guitar into one, you plug a microphone into the other, and you're good to go. The recipient on the other end of the Zoom call or whatever your platform is, they are going to hear your instrument and they're going to hear you clearly. Drumming is a whole different animal because how do I show you what my foot is doing? I need a camera on my feet and I need a camera above me so that it's easy to see where your hands are going and how they're interacting. Then I need another. So all of a sudden you're four cameras. Now you got to figure out how do I switch all of those. So there was the point of the story is there was some technical challenges to fight through, but it worked. I mean, everybody, God bless them. Every family stayed with me, and there were times when people might not have felt well. We paused, and when they were clear, you know what I don't even remember what the old protocols were, but I think you had to be symptom free for 14 days or something like that. Whatever the standard was, we followed the standard. We followed the rules, and we're still here. And now we're full. I think we could probably squeeze maybe one more student in, but after that, we need a second teacher, which is a leap that we're like finally in a financial position to make. So it's been good. It's been a lot. I mean, I work like 7 days a week. But again, it doesn't feel like work. So
yeah, it's cool.
I'm curious, in this discussion of sort of your mission and your love of music and your educational background, you haven't mentioned law school.
What about it?
No. Right. So well, the other half.
Yeah.
No. That's a great question. So the other half of my professional life, for some reason, either stupidity or pride, I'm not sure which it was, I decided it would be a good idea to go to law school in 1996. So I graduated from Temple University School of Law in 2000. I have been gradually ramping my practice down. So if you can imagine, a scale is one side or, teeter-totter or whatever, lever, whatever you want to think about. As the studio got busier, the law practice got less busy, and that's how I'm able to control my time. Fortunately, the two businesses together take care of us, the family. We can pay for the house and the car and all the other stuff. And I'm now in the position of having freedom to not take projects on if I don't feel like it, or there's something about it a person I don't want to work with, for example. This is over on the legal side now. I don't have to work with them.
Yeah. Well, that's a good answer. Thank you.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to push you on the spot.
No.
I was just sort of wondering how those two things fit together. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. I think I understand it pretty clearly now.
They didn't initially.
Yeah.
They really didn't initially. And without going too far into the weeds, when I was a partner at a big suburban firm up in the Lehigh Valley area, and this is not specific to that place because I'll just come out and say it. Most attorneys are fungible. They really are. And, or at least the ones that I've interacted with over the years. So people are mainly concerned about where they're going to vacation. Every stereotype you can imagine is true. Where you're going to vacation, what kind of car are you going to drive? Do you have a shore house? Am I going to get credit for bringing this case in? No, that should go in my column. I knew that guy. He should go in my column. So at bonus time, I get that number put in my account. And it's a terrible way to live. And if I had stayed there, God knows what kind of health problems I would have had. We never fit together. And the attorneys that I worked with over the years, not just there, but at other firms, thought it was weird. If you're a creative person, if you're into dance or theater or music, and I don't mean into it as a consumer, but you are an accomplished person where you can be a professional in either field, that's a threat. It's a competitive threat. And they don't think you're on board 100%.
Yeah.
So I made, that is how I ended up. That was a big factor in starting Groove, because I went out on my own as a solo lawyer because I knew there was no way. If I started another business, that would have been it. They would have kicked me out. So I went on my own at the same time, launched two businesses at the same time. Never do that. It's not recommended. It was not a fun couple years. On an average week, I would say 75% of my time is music related. 25% of my time is for the handful of clients that I still work with. And these people have been with me 15 years, 20 years. And they know, we talk, they're also music people. So that's why we've stuck together. So it's interesting. I mean, I have legal clients that follow the studio that like videos and there's one software guy that I work with, who was a legit low brass player, tuba player through undergrad, and he likes to make like Mahler references and Beethoven and stuff, and it's interesting. So yeah, I mean it's an unorthodox thing, but it works. And a lot of the legal stuff now has migrated over to copyright issues and trademark matters and things that actually do fit together quite a bit.
Yeah, that's neat.
So, yeah. So Brian, you and I met. We met through a project that you kind of have taken on in the Kennett community, a jazz vespers, a jazz vespers service.
Yep.
And you had come and proposed doing a jazz vesper service, which is something that I was unfamiliar with. And the first one was hosted at First Baptist Kennett Square, and I showed up and just was really amazed. It was a fantastic quiet time of meditation and worship, and just really, it was very unique. And the Kennett Ministerium has kind of grabbed a hold of that and said, hey, yeah, we want more of this. And we're kind of floating it around different churches throughout the community. And, you know, the goal being doing it at least once a quarter in different churches. But to talk a little bit about jazz vespers and where that comes from and why that's important, to you.
Sure. Well, the thing, it's odd. A lot of people aren't, as you said, aren't familiar with the concept. And the only reason that I know about it is because I'm a jazz person, and part of the history of the art form is, a huge part of the art form is Duke Ellington. And Duke Ellington was one of the first artists, composers to write material for, you know, sacred or spiritual performance. So in the same way that, you know, if you fast forward to today, where in a lot of, air quotes around the word modern, but modern churches where the praise team, it's not pipe, organ, and a choir anymore. It's guitars and keyboards and drum set and vocalists. You know, the music kind of follows the times.
Yeah.
To some extent, in a way to communicate to people the church's message. So with the Vespers, I thought there was an opportunity to present that here. There's a lot of great players in the area, musicians, I mean. And why couldn't this work? I enjoy ideas that have not been tried, or not that this has never been tried before, but in Canada, it's never been tried before, to my knowledge. So, you know, why can't we do something that's different, and maybe that speaks to people? So, the thing about jazz that does not get addressed enough is that in this, you know, in America, I think, although it's probably jazz is bigger in Europe than it is in the States for sure, but instrumental music is family friendly. You can bring your kids. You don't have to worry about any lyrical content that might be objectionable. So I found as I get older that I've appreciated the art form more and more. And why can't this be used to give people a good experience? Kind of in the same way of giving the students a good experience in their development of their own skills. Being able to perform these Vesper services, everybody leaves happy. I haven't talked to one person yet that has attended one of these that felt worse than when they came in. So I think if we can help to use our abilities And that's everybody, the ministerium and the guys and ladies that I perform with. If we can use our abilities to make people feel better, that's probably a good thing, and we should do more of it.
Exactly.
Pretty simple. I mean, it's I mean, that's really what I think we're doing. I think we're trying to improve people's experience because there's just so much negative energy out there.
Could I ask a question? I have been to a Jazz Vesper service before in Lancaster, actually.
Right.
But I haven't been to one of yours. Do you, is there a connection between the music and some elements or elements of scripture?
We do our best to thematically unify the song selections with the readings. So I always defer to the clergy, the ministers, on what readings they want to use, or if there's a theme, if there's a message they're trying to get across. And then once we know what that is, me and the quartet, then we go to work and we try to pick selections that are, you know, at least titled in the same vein, you know. And again, it's abstract art, so it can be, it's in the eyes, in the ears of the beholder, if you will.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, I thought that, you know, the last one that I did was, I arrived late and left early because my body was screaming for me to be home and to be resting. But I wanted to, you know, just, I wanted to be there. And I just thought it was fantastic. You know, the little bit of time I was there, and it was the way that the scriptures, it all just flowed in together. And I think one of the strengths of it is you're not sitting for a long, you're not listening. This is going to sound odd coming from the preacher, right? But you're not listening to the preacher, right?
I mean,
you're allowing the music. You're bringing who you are, your life experience, what's going on in your world. You're bringing your relationship with the spiritual, whatever that happens to be. And you're allowing the music, and you're allowing the scriptures to minister to you, and that's going to be that it's going to end up being a unique experience for each person who's there, and you're not waiting for somebody to sit there and say, well, this is what you ought to think, this is how you ought to feel, this is how you ought to believe,
right.
Yep. And you're waiting for, you know, as I listen to this song, and boy, there's no doubt that as the music is played, and again, you know, no words, just that you can feel, your spirit just goes in all kinds of different places as the music is played. And, you know, there's no doubt, you know, in my mind that that's the Spirit of God alive and willing at work in our world.
I was thinking that in a way, it sounds kind of contradictory, but it's sort of like sitting in silence. It's very contemplative.
It is. You're right. Not as silent as the Quakers.
You know? Right. But well, I was thinking of that.
Yeah. I've been to a handful of Quaker meetings, and it is unlike anything else for sure. I think. The one of the big benefits of the Vespers project is it can reach people who might not be regular churchgoers. You know, yes, there are some readings, but the Bible informs so much of Western culture that people don't want to acknowledge or aren't aware of because they don't study, you know, it's not really taught in public school for sure. You know, but when you say something like, well, the writing's on the wall, well, that's from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And there are many, many, you know, examples like that. So can we, you know, can we hear a few readings? And I think it's like three or four. And the service is only an hour long. It's not like you're there for 3 hours. It's shorter than a normal concert. If the quartet gets booked for an event, it's usually 2 or 3 hours. So here we're performing, we block out a 75-minute window of time and, okay, how are we going to sequence these things? Interspersed with four Bible readings. Now, if you don't go to church, that's, you know, you could be cool with that. That's not too much to ask, I think.
Well, Brian, listen, thank you so much for being with us and for sharing about Groove Kennett Square. And, you know, you've got room for one more drummer.
There's always room for one more.
Okay.
I think.
All right. So, you know, we're going to have links to the to his website as a part of this. There's going to be a video that's going to have a little bit of the last Jazz Vespers, so you can actually take a look at what Jazz Vespers looks like, sounds like. Again, thank you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And,
thank you.
And for those of you who are listening with us, I think one of the key takeaways from listening to Brian today is, you know, you caught how in the very beginning as he talked about being at his mom's house and grabbing those rulers or pencils or whatever it was, and drumming his way through the house and everything. But then figuring out how to take that passion and turning it into more of a life calling and working with that in order to give back to others. And, you know, whether it's you and as you think about your own passion, what it is that gives you a sense of fulfillment, a sense of calling in your life, or whether you're looking at those around you and you can see clearly their life passion. Because sometimes, quite honestly, we see the passion of other people easier than we see the passion in our own lives. But when you see that passion that's a part of somebody's life, don't hesitate to go up to them. Take a moment, have the conversation. Say, do you know, this is something, this is your passion area. This is important to you. Have you thought about how to make this central, to make this core to the rest of your life, because that's it's gonna be a way that you're gonna find fulfillment. You're gonna move from working, having a job, to having a sense of calling. And there is a light years of difference between having a job for 20, 30 years of your life to having a calling for 20 to 30 years of your life. You move differently, you feel differently, you just experience life on a whole nother level. So, Brian, again, thank you so much for sharing the fullness of your story and for being with us today.
Yes. Thanks again. Very, very much appreciated.
Yeah. And everybody, until we gather again next time, may you be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God alive and well and at work in your worlds.
Amen. Amen.